Hello, everybody. So happy to be here with you today. My guess is that we're either going to have a bigger group than usual or a smaller group than usual because it's on a Monday. It might be a little bit smaller. But I'm so glad I see some of you on the call that I haven't seen live before. So I'm so happy to see that. We're going to start today with a short grounding. And just a short little meditation so that we can really bring all of ourselves fully present. So I invite you, wherever you are, to close your eyes. Feel your seat beneath you or the ground beneath you. And notice the energy in your head. We tend to hold a lot of our energy in our head because of our brains, because of overthinking, right? We think a lot. Let's see if that feels true for you today. It may or may not. And allow if there is any extra energy in your head space, allow it to slowly move downward into your body so that all of you can get the energy and the attention that you need. And with that, I invite you to notice your breath. No need to change it or manipulate it. Just simply notice. Inhaling, opening up. Exhaling and letting go. See if you can allow your breath to breathe you. So instead of manipulating your breath, let your breath breathe you or breathe itself. Just watch where it wants to go so that it's not about effort or doing or action, but simply about being. Simply being. Knowing that there's nothing in this moment that needs to get done. There's nowhere else but here. No need to be anywhere else but here. And from this place, notice how you feel today. This is the gift of being present, noticing, being aware to what is. It's actually so much what we do as coaches and practitioners. From this place of being present, letting your breath breathe you if you can, and noticing and being aware. Check in with yourself. How are you today? How are you today? Locate yourself. Are you feeling open? Joyful? Are you feeling anxious or fear or grief or all of the above? How are you today? What is moving through you today? What do you desire today? And just notice. That's all. Just take note. Beautiful. And together we'll take a nice deep breath in. And exhale everything out. Allowing your eyes to flutter open, bringing yourself fully present to our time together today. So I always like to start this particular call with a little visualization, a little meditation like we did, because we're stepping into rewiring your negative thought patterns, which is so much about how we end up in our minds and thinking so much of the time. And so I always like to just start with a little instruction, a little opportunity or prompt to get a little bit out of the head. Before we dive in to the material for today, I did want to open up space for a couple of minutes if we need it, either for any follow-up questions from our module last week on the resistance archetype. So if you have any follow-up questions about the resistance archetypes, anything you've been noticing, feeling, seeing about resistance archetypes either inside of yourself or with clients. So please feel free to come forward with anything on that. Or I also just wanted to leave open space for anything that just needed to be expressed, whatever is moving through you or experience or even wisdom that's coming through, as we all are in so many ways on this journey together through this pandemic. So anything that wants to be heard, expressed, shared on that either. So star two, any follow-up questions or insights or celebrations from last week, or anything that wants to be expressed, shared, wisdom, celebration from this collective journey that we're on right now. Who is this? 5568 are your last numbers?
Leah.
Hi, I thought that might be you. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. I'm doing okay, thanks. Yeah, and I just have to say, like, gosh, a part of me feels bad because I don't participate on Facebook. I'm not so great about that.
That's okay.
There's a lot of resistance there.
You're not alone.
and I can hear myself going, you should do that, you know, being hard on myself on that. And it's just, I just, like, there's a lot of overwhelm from all of this online stuff. And so the resistance is even stronger than usual.
Yeah.
And that's one of the reasons why I raised my hand, is because it's like, well, okay, this is easier for you, so why don't you just raise your hand and do this instead of writing. I gave myself permission. And I wanted to share, I had a call with one of my members, you know, in my circles, who was basically quitting, and I knew she had resistance, and so this module was like perfect timing. And so I actually got on a call with her and talked with her, and I could feel the resistance in her, and I could feel the resistance in me and the defensiveness in me. And I felt the resistance and the judge in both of us. And I felt like the word that you said, shadow dancing, I was like, oh my God, this is it.
Yes.
And so I remembered the steps, and it was like, oh my God, just acknowledge it, you know, be gentle, just, you know, love it. And I was doing that, and it was like, and then the call ended, and I kind of was like really clear with her. I was like, well, you know, it's not about the money or anything for me. It's more about just you know, standing for you, and like, why would you be quitting now when, you know, I'm just asking you these questions and you don't have to answer them, but just sit with that. And then I kind of clearly gave her two options of like, okay, if you're going to stop, then do this, you know, email support. And if not, then, you know, please tell everybody else why, so you don't just disappear. Mm-hmm. And anyway, she ended up sending me a message back and saying, I'm going to rejoin again. I'm going to stay.
Nicely done. Really, really nicely done, Leah. So first of all, yay. You took all of the lessons and integrated them quick and just so beautifully done. And I really want to pull out, there's so much in what you just said, but I think the biggest thing I want to pull out is that it starts with us, right? And that shadow dancing that can happen when we're not aware. It's like the client goes into resistance, and then we go into the resistance, and then we stop loving them, and we stop loving ourselves, and you know, and that just creates more of that energy fog of the archetype. But when we, as the practitioner, can really start and set the energy, the rest of the tools that I gave are uber important, but that's the most important one, right? When we can set that energy and bring the love and the compassion back in, then everything changes from there.
Yes, and I was wondering, and I might have missed it, is there like descriptions of each archetype like that you have, like, you know, where I could...
I should create, you are not the first person that has asked, and that will go on my list, which I will not promise anytime soon,
okay.
but noted that even though I share it, you know, voice to voice in the call, that a lot of people would like some more just, you know, a description from the words I said on paper, and so I will get to that when I can, promise.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thanks for sharing. Oh, and the other piece I just want to share for you and for everybody is like sometimes with social media, we have a resistance archetype at play. But other times when we have resistance to social media, it's actually coming from our inner wisdom and like deep knowing of what we need to do to protect ourselves. I'm not saying it's one or the other for you, Leah, but, you know, just something to note, right? Like, is it aligned to be on social media a lot, or is it more aligned to have some space? Don't ever bring any shoulds into the social media question because it's different for everybody.
Thank you. And, you know, I think that definitely I'm not on social media. Like, I really am not. But in our private group, that's like, oh, well, this is the space for you. And so.
Okay. So what's the, this will be good for you and just a little kind of modeling for everybody. So what is the resistance? What stops you then? Because what I'm hearing is, you know, for the rest of social media may not be aligned, but in our group, I'm hearing that is a desire and it's not a should. It's something that feels aligned. So what's holding you back?
Definitely it's my insecurity or like, you know, my not good enough. Like I can't express myself well enough and people won't understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nobody'll even look at it like what, you know. You know, and then I'm gonna feel more diminished if I do that. So
yeah.
So hiding, you know, definitely hiding.
Yeah. Yeah. I hear that. I've certainly felt that way before myself. What's the higher truth? What does the coach or the wise woman inside of you actually know?
Well, the wise woman in me knows that I'm better in person when, you know, speaking. Mm-hmm. Than I am in writing, and that it's a muscle that you need to practice to get better at.
Mm-hmm. Good. What else does your wise woman know?
And that I do have a ton. Oh, I yes, I the wise woman knows that, you know, I have a ton to share, and I am helping tons of people, and I could help even more, you know, when I move through some resistance that I need to move through, not the other resistance, but the resistance that will help me be more empowered.
Yeah. And what does your wife want to know about if you put something out in the group and it doesn't get read by a lot of people, or it doesn't get a lot of likes? Because that's a possibility, right?
Yes.
What does your wise woman know about that?
That it doesn't matter, that it doesn't mean anything about me.
Yeah. Can you feel that?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm hearing that you're better in person than in writing. But now I might be hearing, I'm hearing between the lines, but I may not be hearing correctly. So tell me if I am, because you know best. I'm hearing that you're better in person than you are in writing, but that there's a deep part of you that knows that you have so many ideas, and it's like the in-person is great, but it can't always happen in person, and that there's a lot of potential for you to be able to share your wisdom through writing, and it's just about practicing and starting, and you'll be okay even if it doesn't get noticed at first, or if there are moments where it's not loved. Am I getting all that right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, perfect. Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah.
So is there some kind of commitment? And I just want you to know, I have no agenda in this, and I am not attached to outcome at all. But is there a desire inside of you to make some kind of commitment around how you're going to show up in our Facebook group?
Yes. Okay. I will commit to, after call, just to go ahead and go on there and put my takeaway and not wait for it to be perfect later, because then it won't happen and the procrastination happens. And so if I just go right on there and just whatever comes up, a lot of times, you know, it takes me longer to process. I'm like, oh, well, let me wait, and then it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
If I can just be okay with whatever comes up right then, even though it's not going to be fully perfect and fully formed yet, just to do it anyway.
Yeah.
And actually, if nobody comments, it's actually okay, because it'll get me used to.
Exactly. You can use it as an experiment, right? Like the safe space of our group. As an experiment.
Yeah.
If it's not perfect, I'll only give you 10 demerits. I'm kidding. I'm not expecting it to be perfect.
I did a little experiment. I'm in a group of like 12 practitioners, and I put out there that I was there to support them one-on-one for an hour because I feel called to do that. And even though I haven't been coaching one-on-one, like I put it out there in this group text, and then I said, you know, email me or text me privately and let me know. And first I didn't have anyone, and I was like, whoa. And I was like, oh my God, I had to call a friend and say, whoa, you know. And then I heard myself, of course, and I said, well, is this not true? And I was telling her, well, maybe I just dove into too deep, like too fast. I just went, woof, and put it out to 12 people. Maybe I should do it individually.
Nice.
And then I ended
that.
Up having two of those people contact me, but it took a while. And I was learning something about it as well. I was learning that sometimes in a group, there's group dynamics where people don't want to, especially women, they don't want to accept help.
It's true.
And so
I'm not going to get too far into that right now, but I do want to celebrate that you put yourself out there and then you re-put yourself out there again with the individual outreach. It's such a great reminder for all of us.
Thank you. Thank
Good.
You.
Yeah, you're welcome. All right, we've got a couple of other hands raised, and I want to make sure I get through all of the content for today. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to dive into the content for today. And then at the end of our call, I have plenty of time for any coaching and any other shares that want to come through. Okay. All right. So, rewiring your negative thought patterns. Unless you have superhuman powers or are so personally developed that you're like, you know, a Buddhist monk on the top of the hill meditating all day long, chances are that you experience negative thoughts and negative thinking patterns anywhere from sometimes to quite frequently, like on a daily or even hourly basis. And chances are that this is the same for your clients or anybody that you work with or anybody that you come in contact with. It's pretty natural and pretty normal to experience negative thoughts. For some people, the negative thought patterns come in before you start a project or before you start working on a goal. For other people, the negative thought patterns can come in when you actually start to move forward or create results. It's almost like they can come crashing in almost as a response to the forward movement. For some people, the negative thoughts happen at every phase of the project. I'm included in that group of people, just so you know. So as we began to see back in our Befriend Your Fear workshop, negative thought patterns frequently go hand in hand with fear. So sometimes when you experience fear, the negative thought patterns aren't there. It's like the fear is more embodied. It's more instinctual. It's almost like it's just trapped energetically in your body. And that's why I often craft questions or visualizations related to the body when it comes to fear, like the visualization that I shared with you in the Befriend Your Fear module. But oftentimes, when fear is present, the negative thoughts and the negative thought patterns are there too. When you're experiencing negative thought patterns, it's like a very persistent voice inside your head wants to tell you that what you're doing isn't enough, or that you're not enough, or that you can't, or that you're not doing it the right way. Or, you know, in a case like right now during this pandemic, that you're going to get sick or you're going to lose all your money or, you know, like insert any negative thought pattern, any negative thought, right? When you tell those types of messages to yourself, you, your clients, are more prone to give up or to overwork, or to make a decision that isn't aligned, or to be in a constant state of anxiety. You guys know this already, right? In other words, even though your negative thoughts are in your head, they have a huge negative effect on your actions and on your experience. Whether you realize it or not, your everyday thoughts have a massive effect on your success, your happiness, and your health. I'm sure most of you have heard the saying, thoughts become things. And that's exactly why, as a coach or a practitioner, it's so important to understand how thoughts work. And so that's why we're going to give this focused attention today. The other thing I want to point out, just as we start, is that often your negative thoughts can be very similar to the fears themselves. So So you might find as we work through this today that some of the things that come up for you are similar to what came up for you as we were looking at befriend your fears or even resistance archetypes, and that's okay. We're going to be approaching it a little bit differently today, and the idea is for you to have as many tools as you can in your toolbox to work, to coach yourself, and to coach your clients. All right, so let me define what I mean when I say negative thoughts or negative thinking patterns, because there's a lot of different ways that we can define negative thoughts. And for the sake of our time together today, we're going to explore negative thoughts or use negative thoughts in the following definition. Thoughts or internal recordings and messaging that persistently or semi-persistently run through your mind and hurt you in some way. That's a mouthful, so I'm going to say it again. Negative thoughts or thinking patterns are thoughts or recordings or messages that persistently or semi-persistently run through your mind and hurt you in some way. Now, negative talk itself, or negative thought patterns themselves aren't necessarily, and I'm putting air quotes around this, good or bad. We don't want to look at it as, oh, it's good to have these thoughts, or it's bad to have those thoughts. Instead, what I want you to ask yourself is the real issue here is, are these thoughts helpful to me? Or are they unhelpful to me? If they're unhelpful, if they stop you or your clients from taking action, if they cause anxiousness, if they initiate self-sabotage, then we want to work through them and eliminate them or be in a process of eliminating them or working better with them. Now, the other way to think about negative thinking or thought patterns, because this is often how they show up, and Lucia mentioned this, I think, in our Facebook group, is catastrophic thinking. Catastrophic thinking. It's like sometimes the negative thought patterns can show up as if we are thinking the worst, right? I'll never be able to do this. That terrible thing is absolutely going to happen. And I'll talk more about catastrophic thinking later in today's class, but just for right now, ask yourself this. Are you prone to catastrophic thinking? In other words, in your mind, do you often or always jump to the worst case possible scenario and just stew there, just get lost in those thoughts? Now, there's no judgment whatsoever if you do. If you are prone to the catastrophic thinking. And just so you know, from my youngest years, I was trained as the most catastrophic thinker I think I've ever met. So it can happen to the best of us. And it can also be overcome. Not in a day. It takes practice over time, but it can be done. So are you a catastrophic thinker? And you know, I'll just say I have found over the years, as I've worked with a lot of clients, that catastrophic thinking is often tribal, meaning that it either runs in families or in cultures or in communities. Now, here's the tricky thing about negative thought patterns. I want you to really understand this for yourselves and for your clients. As thinking human beings with minds, and particularly if you are very smart, which everybody in this training is, you wouldn't have been attracted to sacred depths if you were not a smarty pants. As thinking human beings with minds, and as a culture where we've really placed so much focus on our minds and on mental thought, we tend to think very, very quickly. So especially those of us that are smart think very, very quickly. But in general, because human beings have the minds that we do, and because culture has placed so much emphasis on thinking, we think quickly. Now, if we are thinking positive thoughts or helpful thoughts, I should say, that's great. Having lots of thoughts firing off, you know, quick is a wonderful thing. But when we tend to think negative thoughts, I can't, I'll never be able to, she doesn't really like me, I'm going to get sick, I'm this, I'm that, those thoughts snap off, they fire off very quickly, sometimes so quickly that they're not even in complete sentences in our heads, right? And sometimes so quickly that they cause damage before our higher wisdom even gets to detect what thoughts are being generated and firing off. So it makes it really hard sometimes to even notice negative thoughts, to even be consciously aware of them sometimes. And then what happens is that you end up thinking the negative thought over and over again, and we'll look at why that happens in a little bit, without catching it, right, because it's just happening so quickly. And eventually you just begin to accept that negative thought as truth. You begin to accept the negative thought or the negative thinking pattern as truth, and you're taking actions based on it. But of course, a lot of negative self-talk, and in fact, most of negative self-talk, is inaccurate. The thoughts are simply not true. There might be a kernel of truth somewhere in there, but overall, they're not true. So, for example, let's say you've sent out a resume or you have a client, right? And by the way, this is why it's so important as practitioners who work with clients to be aware of all of this, because our clients' negative thoughts, so many of them, they're not even aware that it's an inaccurate negative thought because of what I just shared, because the thoughts fire off so quickly. So, for example, let's say that you've sent out a resume for a job and you didn't get called in for the interview. Your negative thought patterning or your negative self-talk might go like this. Oh, great. See, I knew it. I'm not going to get this job, and I'm never going to get any job that really excites me, never. I may as well just quit now and accept that I'm stuck in my current meaningless career and meaningless existence. Nothing will ever change. Okay, so there's a little bit of that catastrophic thinking that I was talking about earlier. But I want to point out even more here is the importance of distinguishing between what's true and what's story or what's inaccurate. Because, again, what often happens with the negative thoughts is that we make up stories, and then all of a sudden, we believe those stories as truth. Like I said, there's always a kernel of truth, right? So what's true here is that you sent out a resume and you didn't get called for the job. That is a fact. But everything else is false, right? Everything else is a story. Another way negative thoughts function is that we stew. We get stuck repeating those negative thoughts over and over, and then they keep us in a holding pattern where it's easy to continue on and on and on to think those negative thoughts, instead of brainstorming solutions on how to move through a problem that triggered the negative thought in the first place. So we get stuck in the cycle, in the patterning of the thoughts, instead of brainstorming solutions. Negative thought patterns can also very often support someone in feeling self-righteously angry or frustrated, either at yourself or at others. And when I say self-righteously angry or frustrated, what I actually mean by that is that negative thought pattern, I mean, anger is important, right? You know, I've said this before, even frustration. But when negative thought patterns are involved, what they do is they help the individual to just stew in the negative thoughts without moving on to actually solve the problem. It's like it almost becomes easier or way more comfortable to be angry or blame yourself or someone or something else than to actually strategize and move out of the problem that you're having. It's a little bit like that victim archetype that we were talking about last week. So if you're resonating with this, take note, because this is something that can happen often and goes unnoticed. Again, oftentimes what negative thoughts do is support you in being angry or frustrated or in blame at others so that you don't solve a problem or make a shift for yourself. A really useful book that is related to all of this, it's quite a few years old now, but I still always recommend it. It's called The New Earth by Eckhart Tolle. And one thing that he speaks about is what he calls the pain body, pain, P-A-I-N, body. And literally, this pain body is your ego, and what your ego essentially is your thoughts. And what Eckhart Tolle says is that your pain body, or your thoughts, or your ego, are addicted to being in pain. We are addicted to being in pain in so many ways. Or our pain bodies are, I should say. Your pain body will do whatever it takes to remain in the energy of pain. When I first read this years and years and years ago, I nearly lost my breath. It took my breath away. It resonated so deeply for me, and I recognize this for so many of my clients. Your pain body will do whatever it takes to remain in the energy of pain. In other words, the way I often describe it is that we as human beings have somehow evolved, or devolved, I should say, to be addicted to pain, to gravitate more towards pain than to pleasure. And the way that we gravitate towards pain, unless there's trauma involved, then it can complicate things. But otherwise, the way we gravitate towards pain is mainly through our negative thoughts. And there's actually been scientific studies done, hope I get the terminology right here, with amoeba, where scientists have seen that amoeba are more likely to move towards something that is painful to that to the cell than pleasurable. I mean, such a little fact, but it blows my mind, right? Is we really are cellularly in so many ways addicted to pain. It's something that we can override in many ways when we look at our thought patterns. So just take a moment and check this out for yourself. Have you ever gotten stuck in your pain body where it's like you're just stewing in it? And then maybe a friend or your partner says, honey, it's really not so bad. You know, like you can look at it this way instead. Or maybe your mother or your sister says, I know that things feel sucky, but you could do this to get out of your problem, right? Or perhaps a coach or a mentor offers you a next steps action, but literally you're so addicted to your negative thoughts and to staying in pain that you even get angry at whoever is giving the solution for offering the solution. I know I've been there before, for sure. With my husband. I will say no more. Okay, so on a scale of 1 to 10, how active and engaged is your pain body? How active and engaged is your pain body? Scale of 1 to 10. On a scale of 1 to 10, how often do you get angry at others about offering to shift you towards pleasure because you're addicted to your pain body? How often do you get angry at others offering to shift you towards pleasure because you're addicted to your pain body? So I'm bringing this forward for you to see for yourself, but also we need to understand that this can happen with our clients too, right? Who in your family modeled the pain body for you? Okay. Now, oftentimes you can't change certain circumstances in your life, but you, right, like not getting called in when you send the for an interview, when you send the resume, or whatever the circumstance is. You can't change certain circumstances in your life, but you can change how you think about or perceive those circumstances. In A Course in Miracles, which I haven't actually read, but I've read a lot about, it says that a miracle is a shift in perception. I love this. I'm sure a lot of you have heard this before, but think about it with new ears, even if you know this really well, and how it relates to negative thinking patterns. A miracle is a shift in perception. In other words, a miracle isn't necessarily when your outside circumstances change. Instead, a miracle is when you're able to change your thoughts about the circumstance. So small, but so profound, I think. When you can change your thoughts about something, you can feel better, be in a better mood, have a better outlook, reduce anxiety, and maybe even find solutions. Our circumstances are not always in our control, but how we experience those circumstances and who we are and how we feel as a result of those circumstances are often in our control. Take a moment and just, hopefully you'll agree with me on how powerful and profound an idea this is. Can you think of a time when you've had a shift of perception and it's been miraculous? It's really changed your experience and has maybe even changed the outcome of a situation. Now, I don't want to get too scientific here, but I do want to talk about the brain itself for a moment. Because understanding how the brain itself works is important when it comes to moving beyond negative thought patterns. Neuroscientists have really made some amazing discoveries over the last decade or two around how your thoughts actually physically shape your brain. Your thoughts physically shape your brain. In other words, when you think something, when you have a thought, for example, I can't do it, or I'm not good at this, or I'm great at this, right? Whatever the thought is, your brain literally is, it's plastic, it's movable, and your brain literally creates a physical groove or a fast track inside of it with this particular thought. It's almost as if the thought carries a certain energy, and that energy literally creates a groove in your brain. So, and that's called a neural pathway. A neural pathway is created every time you have a new thought. And the more that you think a certain thought, the deeper that thought literally gets grooved in. The deeper that thought literally changes the makeup of your brain itself by grooving it deeper in. And here's the thing. Our brains are very lazy. Yes, it is true. Neuroscientists have discovered that our brains are super lazy. So what happens is when there's an idea that's been thought a couple of times and it's created a groove in your brain doesn't really want to go to the trouble to create a new groove or a new idea. In other words, it doesn't want to think a different thought, even if that new thought would be more useful to you. Your brain is much more prone to go down the already paved neural pathways. And so that is exactly why I call today's call rewiring negative thought patterns, because the brain isn't going to rewire itself necessarily. We really need to support our clients and ourselves to override our brain's laziness and to create new, more helpful neural pathways instead of the ones that are just our MOs, that are our go-tos without even thinking about it. So in order to rewire the negative thought patterns, I want us to really acknowledge how incredibly powerful our minds are, our brains are. And I'm just going to give you two examples from thousands of examples. So this first one is from a study of pain patients and placebos. In 9 double-blind studies comparing placebos to aspirin, placebos proved to be 54% as effective as the aspirin itself. So from this, one might expect that placebos would be even less effective when compared to a much stronger painkiller like morphine, but that's actually not the case. In 6 double-blind studies, placebos were found to be 56% as effective as morphine in relieving pain. Just think about that for a second. This is how strong our minds are. When we think that a substance is morphine, there's a 56% chance it's going to be as strong as morphine, even if it's just sugar. I'll give you one other example. In a recent study of a type of chemotherapy, 30% of the individuals in the control group, given the placebo, lost their hair. So 30% of people that were actually not given chemo but thought they were given chemo lost their hair. Now think about these examples for a moment. They're pretty amazing. They show us that thoughts are so powerful that they can dictate our actions as well as our experience of particular events or our lives in general, and they can also dictate how our body functions. I don't know about you, but to me, that is such incredibly powerful information. And it gives me hope, right? Because the more that I can work on my thoughts, it means the more that I can change things about myself, my experience, and even how my body works. If this fascinates you as much as it fascinates me, I recommend another book. It's called The Brain That Changes Itself. It's about neuroplasticity, and the author is Norman Doidge, D-O-I-D-G-E. All right, now that we've gotten clear on what negative thought patterns are and how they function in our lives and how they work and how they even work in the brain itself, we can move on to the process for how to rewire those negative thought patterns. And the process has 5 steps to it. And it's not dissimilar from the befriend your fear process, but it does have a couple of different nuances to it. So you'll definitely see some similarities, but nuanced for working particularly with thoughts and with the brain. So step one, identify your negative thoughts, right? So as we looked at earlier, oftentimes your negative thoughts happen so quickly or so persistently that you don't even notice when you're having a negative thought. Your clients don't even notice when they're having a negative thought. You just think it's the truth or that it's the way things always need to be, right? Whatever it is. And so that's why it's so important, first and foremost, to become aware of when you or your client are having a negative thought and to identify it. The process of identifying your negative thoughts allows you to begin to see the difference between truth and story that we spoke about earlier. Now, there's lots of different, I'll say, like, types of negative thoughts. And I want to just briefly share, just so that you're able to better identify when you're working with clients and for yourself. They fall into different categories. And the categories that I'm going to share with you today come from a book by David Burns, where it's called The Feeling Good Handbook, and he talks about common cognitive distortions. In other words, 10 distortions that can fuel catastrophic or semi-catastrophic thinking. I'm going to share some of them with you right now. So one of them is all or nothing thinking. In other words, all or nothing thinking is evaluating people or situations in black or white terms. So for example, since I didn't get this job, I will never be able to get a job that makes me happy. We're going to go way deeper into all or nothing thinking when we get to the myth of perfection in a couple of weeks. Another type David Burns calls mental filtering. Mental filtering is letting a single negative experience negatively color the whole situation. So, for example, you're preparing lunch for some friends, and you discover that you forgot to buy an essential ingredient for the lunch. And because of that, all you can think about is how the whole lunch is going to be ruined. And then because of that, you forget about the connection among friends or how the side dish is going to be good. Basically, you're letting a single negative experience negatively color the whole situation. That's mental filtering. Disqualifying the positive. That's taking a neutral or even a positive experience and turning it into a negative one. So, for example, a friend comes over to visit and tells you that you look great, and your immediate thought is, I don't feel great, she doesn't understand, or God, she's not seeing how bad my hair looks today, or whatever it is, I've done that before. So you're taking something positive and you're making it negative. Someone tells you you did a great job, and you can only see what didn't go well in it. Another type of cognitive distortion that creates negative thoughts is jumping to conclusions. Quickly jumping to a negative conclusion that isn't justified by the facts of the situation. You assume you know why someone else does what he or she does, but you don't bother to check it out. So, for example, you pass a coworker in the hallway and say hi. If that coworker doesn't respond, then you think, oh, he must hate me or he must be upset with me. What did I do wrong? But when you check it out, you find that the coworker was preoccupied about a sick child, and that's why he didn't say hi. That's almost like mind reading, David Burns calls it, right? Jumping to conclusions. We do a lot of mind reading and assume negative things. Or we do fortune telling when we jump to conclusions. In other words, you just quote-unquote know that things are going to turn out badly. For example, if you wake up with a headache, then you say, now my whole day is ruined. You're fortune-telling. You're assuming you're going to have that headache all day long. right? Another common cognitive distortion is emotional reasoning. It's when you take your emotions as evidence for the truth. If you feel that something is right, then it must be true. I want to point out that this is different than tapping into your inner wisdom, right? This is more when you're feeling something because of your fear, not because of your inner wisdom. An example is, I feel useless, therefore I am useless. This is emotional reasoning. Another type of cognitive distortion that leads to negative thoughts is labeling. Identifying a mistake or negative quality and then describing an entire situation in terms of that quality. For example, instead of seeing yourself as an individual who's working through her difficulties and balancing all the things in her life, you might find yourself saying, I'm defective, I'm imperfect, I can't get it together, right? You're labeling yourself. And then the last one for now is personalization. Taking responsibility for a negative event when you know that the circumstance is beyond your control. For example, you and your partner are going out to eat at a restaurant, but the service is poor or the food isn't so good, and you find yourself feeling responsible for making a bad choice and ruining the evening. You're taking responsibility for a negative event that is out of your control. You're personalizing it. So I know I went through those quickly. When you work with yourself or you work with your clients, when I say identify the negative thought, I don't mean I tell your client that they're doing emotional reasoning right now, right? You don't have to have all these notes in front of you when you're working with clients. I just share them with you now to give you a wide range of how for you to detect when a negative thought or thought pattern might be coming up for yourself or your client, for you to say, aha, right? The identifying is actually what is the actual thought that is negative. So take a moment right now. You can start this. I'm going to give you a minute, and you can continue this for homework. But just spend a minute right now and make a list of the most common current negative thoughts that you are, you are most common current negative thoughts. Whatever comes to mind right now. Make a list of maybe your top 3, 4, or 5 that are real doozies for you. Your top negative thoughts, what would they be? Anything from your health to your work, to who you are in relationships, to who you are as a child, a daughter, a son, or as a mother or a parent, right? So what are your kind of some of your, just whatever comes to mind for now, some of your top negative thoughts? All right, so you can, I'll give you that homework later. But for now, in this step one, identify your negative thoughts. When you're working with clients, there's a couple of ways that you're going to identify negative thoughts, right? So number one, you're going to have all of the information. You as the practitioner are going to have all of the information and understanding about human behavior and the human mind that we've been talking about today, and you'll probably be able to detect, because of all of this, when a negative thought is coming up for a client or a negative thought pattern, right? And so to help them identify the negative thought pattern, there's a couple things you can do. Number one, you can just create awareness around it, right? Use all of the creating awareness tools that we looked at way back in our creating awareness, reflecting the truth module, looking at mirroring, right? And that's one way that you can do it. Just straight up create awareness in that way by mirroring or reflecting the truth. Or you can ask some questions for the client to be able to identify it themselves. Some examples of questions that you can ask are, what's the belief that's holding you back right now? What's the belief underneath the fear that you're experiencing? So this is, you know, a good question if somebody is talking about fears. I oftentimes find that helping to identify the belief that the fear is associated with is helpful. So as an example, let's take, you know, the fear that I'm going to launch this program and it's going to flop. I'm scared this program is going to flop. Well, what's the belief underneath the fear? So part of the belief is that it's going to flop, yes. But the belief underneath it may be, my marketing isn't good enough. This offering isn't good enough. I'm not smart enough. Right, I'm not getting the right kind of support, whatever it is. And sometimes it's helpful if we can get to that underlying negative thought from the fear to work with that. Another way to identify the negative thought and also to help distinguish between truth and story is, what's the story you're telling yourself right now about this situation? I like that question a lot. What's the story you're telling yourself right now about this situation? Or what's the thought that's stopping you in your tracks right now? All right, so once you've identified the negative thought, then you want to move on to step two, which is to explore the negative thought. Similar to befriend your fear, you want to get to know it better, understand it better. You want to gain insight into it. So there's a number of different ways that you can support a client or yourself to gain insight on a negative thought that's been identified. One is through visualization. So let's practice that right now. Pick from the negative thoughts that you wrote down a few minutes ago, the ones that are doozies for you right now. Pick one to work with, and we'll do a short little visualization with it. So pick one of your thoughts, and I invite you to take a moment and get centered. Close your eyes, and just move back to that grounded place from the beginning of our call today. And as you find your breath, as you inhale and exhale, give yourself permission to go inwards, to journey into yourself. And take that top negative thought, whichever one you picked, and allow that thought to become personified. So if that thought looked like a person, what would the thought look like, that negative thought? It might look like a young boy with a dunce cap on him. Or maybe that negative thought looks like an unattractive version of yourself. Whatever it is, allow it to come up for you. It can be in human form or animal form as a visual. Really see this personified negative thought. See it. See this individual. Breathe with it. Really connect in with this negative thought connect through the eyes, can even hold hands with it or touch it to connect with it. And ask it how long it's been with you. How long has this thought been with you? Ask it what event or series of events brought it into being. Ask it who its role model is. Whom or what did it model itself on? Then I want to invite you to ask this negative thought how it functions in your life. Ask it how it expresses itself in your life. What are the actions that you take because of it? What are the feelings that you feel because of it? And continue to connect with the negative thought, and ask it, what does it really want for you, and what is it protecting you from? What does it want for you, and what is it protecting you from? Inhaling and exhaling, connecting in just a little bit more. And ask the negative thought if there's anything else that it wants you to know right now. Is there anything else that it would like for you to know? And then from there, thank the thought for bringing itself known so that you can understand it a little bit more today. Thank it and then let it go. Let it disappear for now. And then take a couple deep breaths, inhales and exhales. And then allow your eyes to open. Just take a moment, jot down anything from the visualization that you want to remember or make note of, or go back and explore more. So step two, explore negative thoughts. You can do it through a visualization like the one I just shared. Of course, when you're working with a one-on-one client, you can work with them and really mold questions based on the answers that they're getting. When I send you the practicum recording next week, you'll see how I do that. I model that for you with a client, so you'll be able to see that more. So you can do it via visualization, if your client is not a visualization person, you can literally just ask those questions in dialogue, right? Just a regular conversation. So ask exploratory questions. So you can ask any of the questions from the visualization. Some other questions that really help explore are, how invested are you in continuing to believe this thought? Who would you be betraying if you were to think differently or positively here? It's a great exploratory question. Oftentimes, people think negative thoughts because it helps keep them connected to loved ones. Who would you need to forgive if you were to change pattern here? That can oftentimes be really revealing. And I asked this one in the visualization, I think, how does this thought protect you? So I want to encourage you to really to continue to explore your own negative thoughts. You can continue to use the one that you worked with on the call today, or you can work with other ones that you've got rolling around. You can go back into the visualization and continue to work that way. Another really nice way is to literally draw the negative thought. Get out some crayons or markers, pencil, draw it. It can be a literal drawing or an abstract drawing. But again, because those thoughts are firing off all the time so quickly, we want to slow them down a little bit so that we can detect them, so that we can really see them for what they are. So making a drawing or a series of drawings of what it means to feel like I'm not enough, or I just can't do it, or I'm scared of getting sick, or whatever it is, can really help. Draw it, dialogue with it. You can dialogue through visualization. You can dialogue through journaling. I oftentimes will ask a thought, you know, what is it that you want me to know today? Why are you here? You know, I'll literally write those words in my journal, and then I will write back, I will channel back from the thought itself. Just the idea is to get to know the thought very well, right? And these are things you can do with your clients as well. The more that you get to know your thoughts, the easier it will be to bring you to the next step of the rewiring process, which is to consciously choose a different thought. So in order to get there, first, we want to ask, this is step three, is it true? Is the thought actually true? How do you know that it's true? Is it possible that it's not true? Is it possible that it's not exactly true? Right? Now, some of that is going to become clear as you explore the negative thought with your client, for sure. But sometimes it can be really powerful to add this step in, to actually have the moment of a yes. Remember, we spoke about yes or no questions. Almost all the questions I just asked were yes or no questions. And remember, we don't want to use those very often, but we want to use them in a moment where a client is ready to affirm to themselves something important, right? And so it can be very powerful at this point in the process, after doing all that exploration, for your client to actually signal to themselves, to affirm to themselves and to you, to their brains, to their hearts, to their inner wisdom, this thought is actually not true, right? So you can ask a question like, is this thought actually true? Is it possible that it's not true? From there, step four, find the higher wisdom. I did that earlier with Leah, right? It's pretty simple logic, but just important to mention here. In order to rewire the old thought, the old neural pathway, in order to create a new neural pathway in the brain, you want to have a new thought available. So think about the thought that you've been working with so far, the one you worked with in the visualization. What's the higher wisdom? What's a better thought? What's a more helpful belief? Jot one down. So instead of nobody wants to buy my services, what's the higher wisdom? What's a better belief? Now, for some individuals, you guys know the four levels of learning and transformation. I won't go through them again right now. You've heard me share them enough times over the last month. For many individuals, part of the finding the higher wisdom or the new thought is about bringing in the spirit level of learning and transformation, right? Even the term higher wisdom is really, you know, even just asking the question, what's the higher wisdom here? We're bringing in that spirit level, something, a wisdom that is bigger than we are, than our egos are, right? So, you know, even back when, beginning of the call when I was working with Leah, I asked her what would her coach or wise woman have to say here? Or what does her coach or wise woman actually know about this, right? That was this step here and bringing in that spirit, the wise woman. She resonated really with the wise woman, right? That's the spirit level of learning and transformation, connecting in with something bigger than ourselves. So you could also ask here, you know, what would spirit want you to believe? Or insert any language that you know your client helps connect your client to higher wisdom. Even coach, right, from earlier, that can connect to higher wisdom. In order to just continue in with this, I also like to bring it to the feeling level, the body level. So once there is the new thought or the higher wisdom, I like to ask, how does this new thought feel? Feel it in your body. I like to ask, what would be different in your life if you believed this thought with your full body, mind, heart, and soul? What would be different in your life? Or who would you be if you could step in fully to this thought? What questions like these last two do is it helps build more investment in the thought itself. It helps build investment, desire to pursue this new thought. When you're supporting a client to rewire their negative thought patterns, you want to build investment in the new thought, or else it's really hard to do step number five, which is create a new neural pathway. And that's because creating a new neural pathway takes work. It takes persistence and consistency. It takes commitment to the new thought pattern and the new way of being. And so it's just, your client is going to be more likely to commit if they're invested in it. So step five, create the new neural pathway. And you're going to do this through supporting your client to think the new thought and to take the new actions that are based on the new thought. So this is really about practice. This is about practicing the new thought. Practicing the new thought literally enables you to create that new groove in the brain, the one that holds the positive thought. Because remember, our brains are lazy. We need to groove the new thought, or else it's always going to be on autopilot on the old thought. And remember, thoughts lead to things. We looked at that earlier. When you groove new thoughts, you take different actions. Sometimes it can be the same actions, but you take them more easily. All right, so how are you going to practice the new thought, support your clients to practice the new thought in order to groove it into the new neural pathway? Well, they can dialogue or visualize with the new thought, with the more helpful thought, persistently and consistently. This is more than a one-time deal. Takes a little bit to groove, right? They can write about the new thought every day. I'm not a big fan of just writing the mantra, just let's write down the mantra. I don't think that's as helpful as writing about it, right? So if the new thought is, I am healthy and my immune system can handle this, ask your client to write about it a couple times over the week. Why? You know, to expand on it, to have a 5-minute journaling session on it. If you want to go down the repeat the mantra road, the way I think it's more helpful is to not just say it, right? I am healthy, I am healthy, I am healthy, I am healthy, but slow it down and breathe in the new thought to every nook and cranny of your being and feel it in your body. So I like to mix and match or draw the new thought, right? Anything that is going to help the client continue to practice not just saying the new thought, not like repeating it like a parrot, but really being with it, believing it, being present to it. All right. So I said more that you want to do it way more than once, right? And this idea of practicing, you can think about it as wanting to get in shape and going to the gym, right? So if you're like, I really want my butt to look better, and you go to the gym once and work out for a half an hour, and then you leave and you look at the mirror and you're like, why does my body look exactly the same as it did before, right? That's right. But if you really want to make your butt look better, you're going to go to the gym every day for a month and do the butt exercises, right? And then you're going to look better. It takes practice. So again, practice it. Support your clients to practice it. Some other ideas are collaging it and really connecting in with the collage every day. Also, catching the thought. So when you go into the negative thought, once you have gone through this process, you're going to be able to more easily identify, I'm going into that negative thought pattern right now, and replace it with the new thought right then and there. It might only last for 5 seconds, especially if it's one that has been grooved in super deeply. You know, the old one is really persistent. The new thought may only last for 5 seconds, but again, if you do this persistently and consistently over time, because the brain is plastic, it will eventually change. Now, only working with the thought I believe that this, now, there's no scientific backing to what I'm about to say next. It's just my own personal observation with myself and over many, many, many years of working with many clients. In order to really create the neural pathway, I have found that it is not enough just to be thinking the new thought, all the things we just spoke about. Taking action based on the new thought is the outer component of practicing the new thought. When you take action based on the new thought, then you begin to prove to your psyche that the new thought is worth investing in more and more. So, for example, if the old negative thought was, my newsletter will never be successful, and the new higher wisdom thought is, I'm willing to believe that I can have an informative and well-read newsletter, then what are the baby actions that you can be taking to prove that new thought right? What action step could you take? Being in aligned and balanced action can be a great antidote to the negative thoughts, right? I did that a little bit with Leah. I asked her if she wanted to make a commitment based on this, you know, new understanding around her writing being good enough. So for yourself, whatever the new belief that you came up with on the thought that you've been working on today, what are one or two baby step actions that you could take over the next week to support grooving the new neural pathway? Write those down. So, all right, we've got just a couple minutes left. You're going to be getting a couple of worksheets this week to help you go deeper with all of this. Take a moment right now and write down, what are you taking away from our call today? What are you really starting to see for yourself? And as I promised earlier, I'm going to hang on the phone for as long as need be. I'd love to hear some takeaways from today's call. I know I spoke a lot. I want to make sure I got through all the content. Any questions on today's call, any follow-up questions from last week's call, or anything else that's moving through you, I would love to hear from you. Star 2. I know I spoke a lot. Let's see if anybody has any words or anything they want to ask. No? Hold out. Oh, here we go. We've got something. Stephanie.
Hi, Joanna.
Hi.
Hey. So this was amazing, and I'm really seeing a lot of places where this is some work that I need to do. And I was just curious. So the thought that I was dialoguing with is one that's been coming up a lot, especially now that my kiddo is home more, mm-hmm. Which is this persistent negative thought that I'm not a good mom. Mm,
yeah.
That, you know, I need a lot of personal space and time for myself, and that's not something I have anymore. And so I feel like I've been, just like lashing out a lot. There's a lot of anger, and like, it's not who I want to be, but it's like, I can't stop myself sometimes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, something that came up for me, the new belief, is that I am a good mother and that I can be there for her without losing myself. Because when I was dialoguing with this like evil cartoon mom, what came up is like what it's protecting me from is there's like a sub thought that if I'm like fully showing up there for her, I'm going to be absorbed into like full on mom mode and I'm going to feel stifled and I'm going to lose myself in it.
Yeah.
Which feels really powerful, but I'm feeling a little bit stuck with the last piece around actions around it. So like okay, the actions, like I can be there for her more. I can be present completely. Try to stay engaged with the games that she wants to play, but I'm not sure how to turn losing myself piece into something actionable.
Yeah, I got it. So first of all, I just want you to know I resonate 100% with what you're talking about, just so you know you're not alone.
Yeah.
This is, I think, a very trying time. Mm-hmm. What would it look like to be present to your kiddo and enjoy yourself at the same time? Or I actually want to get more detailed on that question. Like, what are some activities that are within the realm of what can be happening right now, or even schoolwork activities if you're doing the school stuff like I am, where you can give her what she needs, but you can actually enjoy yourself too, and be resourced?
Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to think, how can I bring my own interests into the play? Because playing Stacey for 5 hours is, not my jam.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe, going for more walks outside. She really likes to learn about plants, and I'm really enjoying, doing some plant ID right now. So maybe trying to engage her in that sort of play. And, maybe we can bring the babies with us. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, okay, but I think it's worth trying, right? We'll see. It's you never know with kids. But
yeah.
I would try that. I don't know you that well, but I'm just going to throw out a couple other things. I do tarot with my kids, and they're fascinated. They get to look at the pictures, and I ask – it's so much fun to pick a card, and then – to think about what might it mean, on their level, and ask them about what the pictures mean, or even have them make up a story with one or two cards. So if that's something in your personal practice, that can be a beautiful thing to share.
Yeah.
And a couple other pieces here. So the other thing is, let's go even deeper with the thought. When there's certain activities we have to do with our kids that just are annoying or that we don't enjoy, right? Like the playing with the dolly, whatever it is. What is the shift of perception for you that can be a miracle when, you just have to do those things?
Yeah, when you said that, it was a little light bulb of sort of taking the bird's eye view and looking at it as being the sort of moment in time that's not going to last forever, and that someday she won't want to do that, and I'm probably going to miss it.
I just got chills when you said that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, you have to remind yourself of that shift in perception right there. Right?
Yeah, that feels big.
Okay, good. And then just the last piece I want to mention is that I think there's another new higher wisdom thought that could be brewing there for you around also what it means to be a good mom. I will just say I've been working through this period to cut myself a lot of slack. And know that I have to be very present to my kids, but also they will survive if they insert whatever is for your family. For me, it's if they watch a little more technology than normal, they will still be okay and know they are loved, because the truth is we do as mamas have to take care of ourselves.
Yeah.
So just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, she has had more screen time, and I feel like that's been contributing to that thought pattern. So I appreciate
there might
that.
Be a thought pattern. Yeah, exactly. So there might be a shift there for you around she can, during this bizarre time that's not going to last forever, she can have more screen time and still, evolve into a beautiful human being who knows she is loved.
Mm-hmm. I'm not irreversibly damaging her.
No. It's like catastrophic thought is trying to
exactly.
say.
Exactly. Exactly. Good.
Cool. Good. Thank you. That's all really helpful.
Good. I'm glad. So.
Hey. I wasn't sure if you would get to me. I appreciate this a lot. Hold on a second. My page, what I was looking at. Yeah, my negative, and it's just so, like, intertwined to the resistance, was about, like, the pivoting to telemedicine. I've done reach outs, but then I, like, just stopped. I just felt like it, like, I wasn't in it. You know, it just didn't resonate. Like I'm feeling probably reflecting that, you know, all the online that I feel pressure, and I kind of feel like me reaching out was like I'm just another person doing online yoga, or we could, you know, like it just felt like the part that was disingenuous, like that they wouldn't hear the message. And I mean, I think that's part of the, you know, mind reading or jumping to conclusions. But also I feel like that, you know, people are like, I'm feeling overwhelmed, and I feel so, but then it also feeds into my not, you know, to kind of procrastinating and, you know, not doing something, you know, that I need to be doing, but I'm not sure what I need. So there I go into confusion.
Yes. So I'm going to point out a negative thought pattern that I think I've picked up from you over the last couple of months. This may not be accurate because, you know, but tell me if this lands for you. And I'm trying to think how to articulate it because I don't know exactly how to articulate it. But my sense is that what I've heard from you a number of times is that there's this belief that all the people out there that are doing the marketing and the internet, you know, stuff and all of that, like, it's all at the same time, like, they're not doing it well, and they're doing a disservice, and also they're doing it so much that it doesn't leave any space for you.
I think that there's some of that, that that's one of the, to define myself as not like them.
Yes, I am not like them. I feel that strongly.
Yeah.
And so I love that about you, because you're not like, in so many ways, you're not. Like, and you've been, like you've said before, you've been doing this for so long. You have so much wisdom. You go so deep. So I understand the impulse of I am not like them, but what I see is that in some ways it's a self-sabotage mechanism for you.
Mm-hmm.
This grounding into like I am not like them kind of turns into then you stopping yourself from taking any action that might have you perceived as like them.
Yeah, and definitely, yeah, I would say that's accurate. I mean, there's a, you know, when someone tells me, oh, I've done acupuncture before, I know what it's like, and I'm kind of like, how would you know what it's like? Crosses my frustration threshold.
Yes, I totally hear it, and I totally get it, and I don't think it's helpful for you. Like, if it were helpful, if it were fueling you to write lots of articles about how to, you know, like, I don't know, about Chinese medicine, like, in different ways, you know, like, then it would be a helpful thought, right? But I think the ways that you're using it are unhelpful.
Okay. Well, actually, I do write a lot of articles.
Okay, good. I didn't.
No, I actually publish a lot. I mean, I actually get, but it also, some of it gets, when you talk about the Chinese medicine, it does there's it's not my imagination here, a negativity around Chinese medicine. Like, it's like, oh, ooh, you know. Oh,
well, some people are going to have that for sure, and they're just not your people, and that's fine.
Right.
You know, because there's more than enough people in the world who are very open to it.
So this is a negative thought that goes around. Is that the...
Exactly. I think it's like cycling on itself and creating self-sabotage. So let's siphon it out a little bit more, and let's get detailed, like particularly on the issue that you brought up around outreach in this moment. Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing is a little bit the underlying negative thought pattern is, if I do outreach, then I'm going to just annoy people or overwhelm them more and be perceived like everybody else.
Correct. Yeah.
Right. And so let's shift that. So we agree that that's not so helpful. So let's shift that to something, what's a higher wisdom? So what would be a higher wisdom thought around the outreach right now?
That it could remind them it could remind people that there is something else available.
Yeah.
To search for it themselves.
Yeah. So even though a lot of people are marketing right now, nevertheless, for the person that's meant to listen to me, when I do outreach, it can really remind them of something that could be of so much value for them. Mm-hmm. Or a shortened version is, the outreach could really remind someone of something really important.
Okay.
Okay, so that's what you thought. Like I said earlier in the call, we need to practice it, right? Because you've been thinking the other ways for so long that they're just your MO. So I do want you to practice it. But that being said, if you just think into this new thought for a moment longer, you know, the outreach could actually be of use, could be of value, could be an important reminder. What would be different for you if you were to fully believe this thought?
What would be different?
Yeah, if you were to really fully believe this new thought, what would be different for you?
I would probably send out my newsletters more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
That was even before this whole COVID thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was very resistant to writing it, and then I would get like someone who would unsubscribe, and then I would be like panicking. Someone would.
Mm-hmm. Never look at unsubscribes. I learned that early on. They do not come to me. I do not get notified because, yeah, that can trigger all the things.
Yeah. So that's when I saw some of the other, the other patterns which I knew, you know, mm-hmm. kind of like the disqualifying.
Mm-hmm.
That I would be much more, probably more feeling good about sharing what I know, but
mm-hmm.
part of it is I also don't feel like sharing stuff, like because mm-hmm. it's going to be, you know, tossed aside, that I almost don't want to give it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's just pause there. There's a lot. I know there's more on this list, but
right.
even if we just take a look at this, if you'd be sending out your newsletters more, if you'd be sharing more, you know, all of that. There's no, yes, some people are going to unsubscribe for sure. I'll tell you that right now. Some people are going to unsubscribe.
Uh-huh.
But if you do all of that, Cho,
mm-hmm.
and you do it persistently, there is no way that it isn't also going to bring in more business,
mm-hmm.
period. So based on all of this, if there was one baby step that you were willing to commit to, even if you don't fully believe it, right? We haven't fully grooved the new neural pathways, right? But if there was one outer step that you were willing to commit to this week, what would it be?
Well, to send that, I think I shared the doc with you. The
mm-hmm. I'll take the, a look. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To just send it and just be whatever. It'll be what it'll be. Started getting like stuck on what's the pricing? Should I charge
exactly? Just do the outreach. And so I want you to really commit to that. And I will tell you right now, there are times as you move through the week when you're going to take the action, you're going to go back into the old way of thinking. But I want you to remember this conversation, and I want you to come back to, but I'm sharing something important that could be important and valuable for people. And even if that only lasts 10 seconds, just let it last long enough to take the action, right? Because, mm-hmm. again, this is a practice.
Right. Okay.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Okay, great. I've got one more hand raised. I'm going to take it. I think this is Susan. Is that you?
Hi there. It is.
Hi.
I was having trouble with my baby steps, and I don't know if it's just confusion resistance, but my persistent negative thought is I'm getting fat. Being home, and my negative thought presented in the form of my mom, who was I still really have some healing work I'm working through with her. She passed a few years ago, but she's super abusive and judgy and really about the body. But what I got, one of my takeaways I can share at the same time, is compassion for her, because she really was trying to protect me. Because her mom was very obese and had diabetes, and because my mom felt rejected and not good enough, so she wanted to protect me from that, from rejection, from health issues, from depression. And the better feeling thought and the wise truth is, it really doesn't matter. My weight doesn't change my worth. I'm completely perfect and lovable, and that's what she communicated when I pressed for more wisdom. And then I don't know what baby steps toward that. I mean, if it was something to do to not get that, I could think of baby steps, but baby steps towards accepting myself.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah. So tell me the higher wisdom truth again. I just want to get the words right.
You are worthy and lovable regardless of your body.
So, Susan, if you believed that 100%, which you may not yet, right, because it's a new belief, but if you believed that 100%, what are one or two things that you would be doing differently starting right now?
The first thing that comes into my mind, and I'm arguing with it, is like just not worrying about food, like eating what tastes and feels good.
So you just gave yourself away because you said you were arguing with it, which means that we know that's a good action to take.
Okay, good. So, yeah, I guess, right? More resistance.
Yeah. So, this is your homework for this week.
Okay.
Anytime you start to worry about foods, and this is going to require you really being on top of your thoughts, right? Noticing them as they come up.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime that you notice that you start thinking, I'm fat, and then you start worrying about food, I want you to bring yourself back to the higher wisdom statement.
Okay.
And even if it's just for 10 seconds, let go of the worry.
Okay,
because, again, it's a process about the regrooving, right, the neural pathways. So it may take a bit, but that's your work for this week.
So redirecting the thought versus, like, a literal in-the-world action.
Right. For some people, it can be an in-the-world action, right? Because I didn't know.
Okay.
You may have said, like, take a bath every day, right?
Okay.
You know, to help with self-love,
yeah.
But that's not what you said.
I thought of besides food was post a picture of myself not sucking in my stomach, but that felt like too far.
Okay, well, let's have that as, like, a second reach. You know,
okay.
Like, if you if that can be a stretch but not a die, right?
Right.
I think that would be a good one, too. But don't do that in lieu of the first one. I think the first one is going to lead to the second
one.
That they can be done in tandem. Okay?
Right. Or that I won't need to because I'll be at peace with it. I would like that
exactly.
to be the outcome.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you, Joanna.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Appreciate it.
All right, everyone. Please post more takeaways or questions in our Facebook group. As always, thinking about all of you. I want to hear from you. And I will talk to you very soon. Bye.
The moderator has left the conference.